Blog Talk Radio.
Focus on what's there and not on what there wasn't. What happens, happens, and what doesn't happen, doesn't. Love your fellow woman, love your fellow man, and remember always live your life the best that you can. Focus on what's there and not on what there wasn't. What happens, happens, and what doesn't happen, doesn't. Love your fellow woman, love your fellow man, and remember always live your life the best that you can. When it's raining, skies are gray, and you're feeling bad, think for a minute about what's making you sad. You might be short of money, but what's that really worth? All the money in the world couldn't buy you birth. In a race of millions, you're the only sperm that's full. You passed the hardest test already, life was your reward. Stop feeling down and out, start having a ball, cause being alive is the greatest gift of all.
Yes, the greatest gift of all, bless those. You've survived that initial stage of conception. Now you should be in a, hopefully, a movement of reception. Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, bless those. We're alive because we are being configured to stay alive with the help of the Most High, the Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You now tune into Blog Talk Radio, and we happen to humbly assert we are the higher inner frequency of Blog Talk Radio. We call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class 711 in conversation with Jerome Sage Butler, Part 2. Blesses our eternal creator, Baruch Hashem, Shalom, peace, and Bracha, blessing upon the entire human family experience, 7.5 billion human beings. By the way, blessed souls, this is Anti-Eugenic Radio with creators. Help, our broadcast is taking place right now on November 18th. It's now 11:31 live from Turtle Island equals USA equals AKA Unified Soul Actualization, which corresponds to 10:31 from the Diamond of the Caribbean, Jamaica. We plan to speak with co-host Tree of Life Television Network prolific lecturer Jerome Sage Butler, who dwells within his spiritual, cognitive, emotional realm, coin promoting Tree of Life values. Butler is driven to tap into his deep ancestral wellsprings of divine source, correlating, relating, and developing a dialogue with other human souls intended to guide human dialogue towards analyzing the moral and ethical nature, as we as human beings are well advised to explore. Program content will focus on empowering women in order to strengthen men. As the song began, blessed souls, love your fellow woman, love your fellow man. And also, if you want to learn more about Jerome Sage, you can check him out on Facebook and on YouTube at Tree of Life Television Network. Our calling number will be 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones in a peaceful and pleasant manner. Today's program is dedicated to the elevation of the soul of my dear mother-in-law, Rivka Fatuna, alias Shalom, Bas, Daniel, Alav Shalom, and for the Abachra Tamim, Eliyahu, Ben Menachem Mendel, whose life was cut short 2 months ago by a heinous crime where a bullet was put into his head, and now he's dwelling in Jah Kingdom. However, we also want to participate in bringing him bliss and peace, inner peace, up in heaven. With that being said, we're going to turn down the music. This is from Ari Lesser. You always get more from Ari, not Lesser. That's his song, Life. And I'm so happy to bring back on after almost a month, within the last month, Drum Sage Butler. Brother, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm great, Brother John. Much love to you, to Brother William, and to the other brother, and to all that is listening across the length and breadth of the live podcast, and to, you know, the archive listeners as well, too. You know, just giving thanks that in this world of such vastness, right, you know, that information and the spirit of love and that sharing can draw us, you know, into one space. Very thankful, Blog Talk Radio, you know what I mean? Blessings to you, brother.
Okay, I just want to share something. Today happens to be an auspicious day, Jerome Sage. Today is the day of liberation with the Hasidic branch of the Nation of Israel, of the second, actually the first Lubavitch Rebbe, who was the second Chabad Rebbe, who was a master of meditation and elucidating on meditation. Because I think, Jerome Sage, I'm looking forward to hearing your take on this, most human beings have not been educated on how to meditate. Unfortunately, they've been inculcated to become jealous and hate, which is, these are two antithetical emotional attributes, complete antithetical to the time of universal redemption and the revelation, the full revelation of the line of Judah. So this Rebbe talked about the idea that each and every person, may he or she be graced to know and to perceive and to understand upper level unities and lower level unities of what you call Jahfulness, Elohus, godliness. And as King David taught his son Solomon, The Creator seeks all hearts. And David went on to say, and if you will seek him out, he'll be found to you. Inferring from the negative, if a person doesn't seek out the Most High, he or she won't find him. But King Solomon came to further elucidate what his father said. The Most High is found in the content of all human hearts. As King David said as well, with all of my heart I have sought you out. And the Mittler Rebbe, as he was known, Rabbi Sholem, Rav Dov Ber, taught us this seeking out of the Most High is not just with the brain, which is a fine place to seek out the Creator cognitively, but from the more inner dimension, which I know Rasta can relate to, in the eye of the intellect and the heart, which is so close and yet so very, very deep. Your take on these matters, Drum Sage?
Blessing for the Rebbe. I mean, qualitative thought that really inspires action, that is likewise of value, is always something that we must never take for granted. It's the highest, you know, nutrients of our souls. The essence of meditating outside of the construct that we've been taught about meditation, it is what we meditate on rather than how we meditate. I think, let's just say, practices of what we've been taught in this world, both Eastern and Western in some degree, have taught us to meditate in a certain manner. And maybe I think that is not necessarily a manner that is congruent with the divine flow in us. So I think to meditate upon the things which really, as you're alluding to, or the Rebbe is alluding to, that would awake, well, true love in the soul, right, would be of a greater value. To meditate upon these things which would bring you to wisdom, you know, things such as temperance, you know, of, you know, the good nature, you know, of things like forgiveness and truth, you know, and mercy and kindness. If we can truly meditate upon these things within ourselves to give them life, because let's say meditation is calming to allow for a flow, and let's say the world is agitation and a kind of an uncontrolled flow, or it's less, the control is lessened. And let's say meditation is a way for the individual to focus their thoughts, right, on the impetus of their souls to really create that in the outer world. Let's say your thoughts really are to magnify your true deep emotions and feelings, the ontological, that which is truly, you know, your nature. Let's just say your thoughts in meditation is to awake something that is already present. Then it is truly to awake love and the virtues, I am supposing, that will allow a human being to act morally, act ethically, and beyond a action, to be able to experience from first cause the divine. This would be my take on it, and, you know, wisdom through meditation, allowing love to flow in the psyche, in the behavior, will allow for an experience of the divine.
Beautiful. I like your take on it, Drum Sage. We have a couple, we actually have three more gentlemen on the line. We have William, and I'm sorry, from air code 786, can you identify your name, please? I know you called in last time, but I'm sorry, forgive me, I forgot your name.
Travis.
Hello? I'm sorry?
Travis.
Okay, Travis. Travis, and we also have William on the line as well with Drum Sage. I'd like to, I want to talk to Travis and William, and then we're going to bring on Dennis Ryan in 1 second. Gentlemen, you know, again, primarily my interview with Jerome, but I have no problem after I present certain teachings to let it become interactive between Jerome, Travis, William, and of course Dennis Ryan, and then I'll bring up the next, say, I'm basically using as my source material for this whole idea of empowering woman, which strengthens man, to from Proverbs, which King Solomon wrote in tribute to his mother, Bathsheba, and we brought in now Dennis Williams, our elder statesman here on Blog Talk Radio Soul Class. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Don.
And I'd like to introduce you to Travis, William, and last but not least, Jerome Sage Butler, live from, I think, the St. Andrew's precinct of Jamaica? Yes, yes.
Yes, yes, brother. Blessing, brother Dennis.
Likewise.
Okay. Gentlemen, I'd like to start the show. I'd like to start off with a prophetic statement by a woman who actually is considered one of the matriarchs of Israel, and her name is Rachel. Everyone knows about Rachel. She had two sons, Benjamin and Joseph. But there's, in the naming of her son, because she was a prophetess, there is a deep instruction, which I think all the participants will enjoy hearing it and as well giving their own points. We'll start with, I'll say it, and then I'll send it over to, volley it over to Jerome Sage, of course, our co-host, and then Dennis, and then Travis, and then William. So it goes like this. We take the verse from Genesis chapter 30, verse 24, which said, Rachel named him Joseph, which in the Hebrew means Yosef, means may he add, saying, may God add another son to me. So this is an elucidation from the Lubavitch Rebbe of this generation from 35 years ago, and I think everyone's going to find themselves at home with his teaching and his universality. So Rachel's prayer sums up Joseph's spiritual mission in life, to turn another, that is to say, a seeming stranger, into a son. This mission expresses itself in three ways. First, in making this mundane world, which appears to be separate from the Most High, acknowledge and celebrate its divine source. So we should be in constant state of celebration, blessed souls. Second, in personal repentance, turning back, through which we transform ourselves from estranged others into sons who belong. Third, in reaching out to those who seem estranged from the Most High, revealing to them that they are God's precious children, for whom living life according to God's plan is simply natural. The Rebbe concluded, let us not feel inadequate and capable of effecting such transformations, for we do not work unaided. Rachel said, may God add for me another son. We are merely as flesh and blood with a divine image, with souls in us, are merely God's instruments, the Most High Jah's instruments, Jah's vessels, as really he was lovingly welcomes his estranged children home. Jerome Sage.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful, brother. It's good to hear it elucidation upon the word. It really sparks a lot of clarity in the emotions. Well, I mean, I think most men, if not all of us, can, you know, relate to the great fervor we have gained from our mother in terms of the experience she's taught us. Let's just say it's an experience born in love. And in the ultimate essence, it should be an experience born in love. And if it's an experience born in love through the socialization and the naturalization of thought in actuality, then you're going to manifest a kind of a respectful balance, you know, decent, you know, demeanor and belief system and attitude towards experience, right? Masculine or feminine. So the essence of a mother is definitely, you know, that soul protector, that first, you know, provider, and the essence of nurture. Now, if we then take the feminine and put it into the construct of the intellect, right, one could then consider a lot of activities which are feminine in nature. One could suggest maybe it is right brains. I mean, people deal with this as their specialty, can tell you. This is my postulation. We could suggest it's a lot of right brain. In right brain philosophy and theory, I think it suggests there's a lot of more emotion-based thinking that is generated in right brain that would create, that I would say comes from, or is informed by the kind of emotional choices a woman makes and the emotional nature of a woman. Now, the essence of mother is, you know, overall, you know, that is the nest, the family, the nurture, the sense of suckle. That is a very umbilical connection. The essence of God is the only essence that supersedes mother. And some would say it comes to fruition in mother. You understand me? So let us continue now in the balance of looking at femininity, or the feminine energy then, the feminine essence in intellect. If the masculine now being left brain, and one would then suggest that left brain is a lot of reason, right? And reason towards practicality and, you know, a lot of, you know, mental alignment, you know, desire, power, and such. One could see that a lot of masculine thought processes are suggested to be a little bit tense and dense sometimes and misguided or short-sighted, right? Because they lack the basic essence of the emotion, of love, the subtleties that really makes the two emissary of the brain work. So my argument is the masculine and the feminine abstracted is of no value, but united is of true value. So I think mother truly understands because of how she is to be with child and to be herself, one being, and be with child, another being, yet in one being. Now, there's great philosophies about life, and I think the incubator and the nurture of life is fundamental in our psyches. So as we understand from our mother's nurturing and how we've been grown practically and pragmatically through our own experience and maybe the experience of our fathers, right? If we learn the compassion that comes from the feminine side, meditate upon the things which are of greater value or of the supporting value to our mental drive as men, then we can realize this is the harmony that truly is the most God wanted, that man and woman He created them. It's really oneness. And even Rastafarian philosophy, even though sometimes it might not be actualized in a lot of ways, but it is there in the philosophy that it's really the emperor and the empress, that it is a union.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Well, my concept is that we're all children of God. And we must remind everybody that they are also children of God. And that's what we have in common. The one commonality to all humans is God. And we were created by God. Yes, our parents had something to do with it, or else we wouldn't be here. But even our names, we didn't even pick our names. Our parents or relatives picked our names. But we are all children of God, regardless of what tribe we ascribe to or we think we belong. We are all children of God. And I just want to mention one quick thing of what you started the program with, and that was the concept of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Meditation is basically thinking. Now, there's three things you can think about. You can think about yourself, if you think you're that important. You can think about other people if you think they are important. But our Creator, our Maker, that is the important thing we must think about. We cannot avoid Him because He's part of our life. So meditation is our relationship with God in some way, shape, or form. In your whole lifetime, you will have many chances to communicate with Him. And that is another form of meditation.
Beautiful, Dennis. Travis, I'd like to ask you a question based on this dialogue. One of my frustrations is that I think people feel that the celebration of our divine source is only relegated to places of worship. What, in your opinion, is holding back the average person walking in the street, interacting with others, that we're not, instead of reminding, I mean, I live in the city. I take public transportation. When I see people use their cell phones, their smartphones, as they call it, or they're not using them sometimes so wisely, instead of maybe like watching something about spirituality or something about health, I see they're playing like these computer games that they would have been playing like 20 years ago when they were in their youth. What do you think we can do, Travis, to encourage people, celebrate your divine source in the streets, wherever, or the plains or the fields or the farms, wherever you are in the creation? What's holding back the human family experience from celebrating our divine source openly outside of houses of worship?
Well, absolutely. First things first, I would say that the Spirit of God is everywhere. There's no place where He is not. It is said that even in hell, His wrath is there. So some part of Him is everywhere. And we have to tap into that and realize that my spirituality, my connection with God is not relegated to a building, to the four walls of a church, four walls of a temple, four walls of a synagogue, four walls of a shrine. He's everywhere. And the minute we take Him outside that box, and those places, not saying that they're bad in and of themselves, but they symbolize a box. The minute we take Him out and realize that He's in the air, He's in the universe, He's in the tree. And as a matter of fact, every face we see, every set of eyes that we look into, we're looking at another form of God, another actualized piece of God. And one of the first things I try to start with when I'm dealing with people, regardless of if they have the same belief system as I, is love. Love is universal. Once I can break down to you and give you that love in a smile, give you that love in actually saying, hey, how are you doing today? Is all well? Is everything okay with you? Listening to them and giving them God-centered advice and saying, hey, you know, maybe you should start to meditate, start to be more introspective, so that would help you begin to find your journey in life. And when I begin to help them to get into a place of meditation or begin to look to the God within themselves, then they can begin to actualize and realize their own spirituality.
Beautiful. Travis, excellent. William, I'd like to ask you a question. As I mentioned at the end of this teaching by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, this whole idea that we are merely God's instruments, how do we educate people on the street, again, outside of our places of worship, that you are a vessel created by the Most High Creator, and just a matter of activating, which is deep, deep inside of you, in the form of a smile, to help the proverbial older person cross the street, to lend a hand, whatever we can, to have a good thought about another person. What is holding us back, 7 billion plus people on this earth, from realizing, all of us? Because if one of us is lacking that awareness, that means if say, like 1 billion people, let's say, allegorically speaking, are missing that awareness that we are just merely God's instruments, that means 14% is missing in all of us, because we're all connected as one unit, as a species of human being.
Well, I would definitely say that what's holding us back would be ourselves. Society has definitely brought us in a state of in which we're a lot of us are zombies. And once we start to realize who we are, and as through Christ or through God, then we can start living a life in which we are example for other people. So it's definitely like a domino effect. Rather than me wanting Bob or Martin to change their lives, I have to change myself. And the way that I hold myself on a day-to-day basis, interacting with Bob and Martin, that will make them see God or Christ through me, the actions of Christ through me, and then they will try to do the same. And it trickles down to everyone that they interact with.
Beautiful, beautiful. Gentlemen, thank you. Now, gentlemen, we're going to go to the book of Proverbs, chapter 31, verse 11. Succinctly, it says, her husband relies on her and he will lack no gain. Now, there's two components here, blessed souls. First of all, that the husband has trust that his wife will not wither away the assets he is trying to accumulate, and she's actually on the same plane with him. And then on another level, the woman is a protective force. And the example that's given here is that the matriarch Sarah, In her merit, Abraham was wealthy when she was taken by Pharaoh. He actually compensated her and him for he was afraid to tell them that they were husband and wife. And he said that she was actually my sister. She agreed to it. And they walked away. They stayed, I think, a couple more months in Egypt. Then they went back to the land of Canaan, later to be known as the land of Israel. But there's two components, blessed souls. Number one, if I trust in the Creator and I've hooked up, so to speak, I, using street language, I've connected with my significant other, the other half of my soul who completes me. Me as the male component, and she being the female component. I must trust in her that she, the Most High, gave to me this opportunity to be completing myself at whatever level of development I am, and that not only will I not gain, I will actually gain from this relationship as any man who's been in a relationship with a woman, and it's been a mutually sustainable relationship with children, sometimes even without children. We have mercies upon those who weren't able to be fruitful and multiply. It does occur in this creation, unfortunately, that a human being will start to realize before he has reliance on her, he must have reliance on the Creator. This is his soulmate, and that he will see not only will Anakmo gain, he will actually profit from this relationship on the physical, spiritual, emotional, and it turns out in many cases, economic plane. Jerome Sage.
Ah, beautiful, beautiful. Well, you know, over the years reading Proverbs 31 and going through the different edicts and, you know, postulations on virtue, you know, in the feminine, I say to the mother consciousness and to the consciousness of how our mothers have inculcated in us a sense of virtue, morality, and decency, and how that now is supposed to inform our choices of a wife. So before we look at the woman or the man, the virtues they hold are the primal cause of end result. Again, if the primal cause in emotion is a lot of times expressed through love, or as love, because God is love, Yahuwah is love, right? And if in a lot of cases that love will come to us, not just as this overwhelming desire, but rather as virtues, as ethical and moral tactitude, that within life, the nature of our thought to truly keep our singular focus on Yahuwah in expression as love, because God is love. So those philosophies are born on the personage of God. The presence of God is what we are accustomed to as humans. That presence comes to us as love. Now, the agape love is a word that the word agape describes the essence of what the love of God is. And then there is the personal human love. Now, though the personal human love is limited as to the scope of agape love, when we as humans, through the socializations we hold, when we can become not just Don or Jerome, Travis, Dennis, or William, but we can become virtues. And the virtues we become opens a pathway for all of our fellow brothers and sisters to become virtues thereof. Virtues that lead unto the presence of love. So when the outer disappears, the inner appears. So the right and left hemisphere of the brain, the masculine and the feminine, intellect, spirit, and presence, the divine nature manifesting in us, when it is aligned mathematically, vibrationally, spiritually, is not just a word, it's an actuality. It is like doing a sequence of numbers towards an end result. It has to be driven by will, by desire. So when the man's desire to forge a destiny based in his will, based upon pure intellect, the woman, the feminine, balances such a strident drive with absolute love, so there can be understanding to know of the consequences of unbalanced action. So, like, in such a discussion like this, I mean, I still beckon for a woman because I'm still a man speaking in a context that would allude to her presence in our arguments. But the essence of what we're still talking about is how to spiritually nurture women. Yes. And then to, from that nurturing, as men, be benefited to be yourself nurtured. And the end result, really, what we all want is to see the family nurtured, and that the family should evolve and grow in the love of Yah. And so, you know, that is on the essence of how the feminine comes into the masculine and how we actualize the principle of divine love, you know.
Beautiful. Dennis, now I believe you're a veteran of 40 plus years of marriage, united with your wife of valor. Can you tell us how you've seen through the decades, how your reliance on her and seeing how you've profited and lack no gain?
Well, in all relationships, there's a thing called love. If you engage into a relationship and it seems to be working out or it's going positive, that means love is starting to be created in the relationship. But the biggest problem is, can you really love God or have a relationship if you don't love yourself and your fellow man? Because you must cover the human part of our existence here on this planet to prepare for the spiritual relationship that we should have with God. And that would be the highest form of love that we can develop in a relationship. So, in effect, what we do is we practice on other humans. If it works, then we go ahead and go to the next level. But the relationship has to be there. You mentioned before people walking around in the streets, playing around with handheld devices. That's nice. But are they trying to avoid things? Are they bored with life? Do they have a relationship? Can you have a relationship with an electronic device that's handheld? Or are you just trying to stay away from any relationships because it's far easier to handle an electronic device in your hand? The hardest thing for people to do is to get along with other people. And that's a relationship that we must develop. Because how can we actually develop a relationship with our Maker if we haven't developed a relationship with other human beings? You would think it would be easier to handle human beings rather than to go to a higher level of our Creator.
Well, thank you, Dennis. We'll go to William and then Travis. William, your take on these matters. William?
Yes, sir. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So your take on these matters?
On the matter of the
a man relying on his wife and from that reliance upon her, he shall see profit, and he shall be lacking no gain, whether it be spiritual, emotional, economic.
Okay. Well, I can't necessarily speak just because I don't have a... I can only speak off of what I see. So a lot of the things that I'm observing in nature as far as reliance, I see that everything is relevant or relative, in which it's a cyclical motion. So in nature, you see a plant is planted, water germinates it, and it creates its profit, starts to grow, and the plant in itself, it's going to provide food and supply food for not only the human being, but the animals obtain security through shelter. The soil and the soil gains nutrients. So that's how I see relationships. It should be beneficial, and everyone in the surrounding has benefit without one person taking more of the energy of the other. So that's how I see it, based off of nature. So
I like what you're saying. I just want to add a little. I'm sorry? Someone want to say something? Okay. First of all, Most High bless whoever had that sneeze. May be strong and go from strength to strength, whoever sneezed. I don't know who sneezed, but we'll just leave it at that. I just want to leave a little marital advice that I've been using for many years. I don't remember when I first started doing it, but in the morning when I depart from the house and I leave my wife of valor, I say a very simple statement to her, and it never feels robotic because every day is a new day in creation. I bless her that Shekhinah, the divine presence, should be with her, that the Most High loves her, that I love her, the family loves her, and I find that's like giving her a little bit of vitamin A, a little vitamin of love. And I can tell you, for you men out there, that before you separate from your loved ones in the morning, you're going out to work, or she's going out to work, whatever the scenario might be, or she's going out with friends, inject that reminder of how divine presence can be with your loved one. The Most High loves her, and everyone loves her. And it's like showering them with a good vibe to go out into the world, or before you go out into the world. I just want to share a little marital advice. I'd like to turn the tables a little bit, gentlemen, and I'm just going to read the verse and go around the table, and then I'll add my own commentary. So chapter 31, verse 12, she requites him or compensates him with good and not with evil all the days of her life. Jerome Sage.
Now, I love the way you broke it down first when you look at the fact of relationship in many contexts, because we know the institutional realities of marriage, and we also know the word in terms of Christendom saying, take yourself for a woman and call her wife. The essence of, the family is created really out of your choice, right? Now, we understand that there are many configurations of relationship in today's world, not all that are in sync with the laws of God. So I can see that, the essence of how we've been taught to express ourselves are a little bit out of whack. So a lot of people are missing the essence of love. So I would agree with Dennis in the sense to say that this love that we are in process of going, that it should definitely involve the humans in the process, the people we come in contact with, the people who are in contact with us. Because part of having a sound understanding of ourselves as human beings to be a good father, a good husband, and as a man to then for our women to be good wives and good mothers and good sisters and good friends, is that we have to share that true understanding of love. And if it is not born in us, like I said, the agape, right, that has to come from the source of love. And Yahuwah being the source of love, and I am all for the essence of knowing the presence of Yah in our lives. Going back to what Travis is saying when you ask about religion as well too, that when this love is expressed, right, we are humans, so we codify things. I'm guilty of it, right? We codify things for the sense of reference, right? So then if you, in a certain moral manner, in a certain ethnic region of the world, they would say, well, you're of this religion or you're of this spirituality. Now, I've always had an issue with saying, but if I see the eyes of God, or if I see with eyes of men, let's look at it with the eyes of men first. I would think that I need to bring something to these human beings. Because if they are not of my persuasion, then I am obviously assuming that love deposes it certainly is not love manifested, because I do not know how to express that. I do not think they have that love to express. So to approach just God is to come to a commonality, to see that God love goes beyond who we are as human beings and beyond the choices we've made. So I think religion might be like, a wall, or an institution rather. No, yeah, the wall might offend some. An institution built around the truth. Now, it doesn't change the truth, but it doesn't make the institution true. And that's very important. Now, love is the essence of it all. And if love is present from source in institutions and in us, to get to that love is the truth by first cause, how we are as persons. So the nurturing we get from our wives and the nurturing we give to our wives become the nurturing that will be our children. And mm-hmm. if all our children are born in this love, not a love based upon persuasion per se, but a love in first cause, that love, I believe, will then unite the love in all of us, in all regions. So each of us that has that love will spark the memory of it, the presence of it, in whomever we come in contact with. And the essence of what the family is, I would think, the first laboratory. If people are not offended by that word, if you are, I apologize. It's the first place where we really get to go to the trials and errors of the experience of the presence of God in our lives, masculine and feminine.
Beautiful. Travis, your take on these matters.
Absolutely. I wanted to actually comment on what you said about Proverbs 31. That's one of my favorite scriptures to pray as a young man seeking to eventually be married. Is I want all of those things and more. Obviously, I have to become that man that will be worthy of it, but that is so absolutely true. Whereas your queen, your spouse, is definitely going to be someone that covers you, protects you, and defends you. I was actually sharing a testimony with someone, not to be too long about it, but a previous girlfriend that I had. You know, I was going through a rough time in my life financially, but we were still in a relationship. But what began to happen was she began to allow people that we were in a relationship began to speak into her ear concerning me. You know, why are you with Travis? Travis doesn't have any money and this and that. You could be with someone better and this, that, and the third. And these were individuals that were close to me that spoke those things into her ear. And how did I know? Because she came and told me. And what began to anger me is the fact that, okay, so you sat there and you let them say this about your man, your boyfriend, but you didn't rebuke them or correct them or say, hey, you know, with all due respect, that's still my boyfriend. I'm not going to allow him to speak these things. So in terms of that, she became disqualified as someone that I would potentially marry because what? She did not defend me. She did not defend my honor. And women are very – they play an important role, not just to serve our physical, maybe emotional, sexual needs, but they're also our comrades in war. So they're what they have to deal with, what they will do in life for us is such a pivotal role as well in the background. So it's just very important that we honor our females and respect them and most definitely choose the right ones.
True.
Amen. And amen.
True. William, your take on these matters.
So in regards to that specific verse on she does him good and not evil all the days of her life, I mean, that's definitely a good attribute to have for your wife. But in the essence of love in itself, if one comes into the marriage with knowing oneself, loving oneself, and loving others, this verse itself, the woman, she will not have any problems doing no evil because she has the attributes of love. So that's my take on it.
First cause, beautiful. Yeah. I mean, every time, first cause. My brother Dan, you know, I have learned a lot from you, like, personally, and, you know, so I would like to hear, not something personal, but we have spoken off here on a lot of things, so, I mean, I know you're a strong husband, you have a very strong wife, and a very strong family structure where the wives and husband are concerned, so share a little bit with us about the structure of your family, because I know that you can stretch your family tree and your ancestry quite a bit.
Sure.
Back
sure. Well, Well, I'd like to just... I personally have to publicly thank the Most High because I was not born into a scenario where father and mother, husband and wife, one was above the other. My mother was the first college graduated female in her family, a second generation Jewish American, her family coming from what is known as Belarus, White Russia. And on my father's side, his sister was the first college graduate in her family. And then my uncle married a physics professor, a woman, who is actually a descendant of Rambam, who I'm sure that Dennis Ron will take note of that one. So I, from my early age, I was always surrounded by very intelligent, nurturing women. And I don't know it wasn't so much that they I'm not going to say that what qualified them to be actualized women was the college degree, but I can't disassociate it with meaning they were beyond the, I would say the you know, if you go back and you watch television shows or commercials, how domesticated and how put down was the woman in the 50s and 60s when my mother and my aunts were growing up, they were totally the opposite. So I didn't associate with women as being objects of one's desire. I saw them as agents of empowerment. So when I met my wife, of valor, and I was dating on the third date, we had just come back from Tiberia, which is also known as the Sea of Galilee. Tiberia, the Kinneret, as they say in Hebrew, is the Sea of Galilee, which for Christians that holds a great significance. From I understand that the Christian Messiah walked on those waters. But I swam on those waters. They're nice waters to swim in. But when we were riding back on a bus, a woman came out of nowhere and started praising my then-to-be future wife, although I didn't propose to her yet, saying, wow, I was very fortunate to be, I mean, she put one and one together, feminine intuition. She put one and one together to say, you're very fortunate to be with this woman. I said, why? I mean, this is some coming out of nowhere, this type of conversation. She said, well, a couple months ago, I had given birth to a child in an Israeli hospital in the north of Israel. And believe it or not, gentlemen, in some Israeli hospitals, they don't serve kosher food. And I contacted the women's seminary where this young woman was. And for two straight days, she brought me food that I could eat according to my faith-based tenets. So I said to them, wow. Now, there's a reason why I was hearing this conversation. I mean, you're on a date with someone. You don't expect a total stranger coming from anywhere in the universe all of a sudden telling you you're interacting with a very nice woman. So at that point, I knew she was a kind person, but here someone was giving testimony right to my face about who she was, and my wife my future wife, she didn't make it. Oh, it's okay. It was just something to do. You would do the same thing. And I said, wow. So and I realized I wanted someone, and I have to admit, on the physical plane, I was attracted to her. But on the emotional, spiritual plane, I said, this is the woman I could build my life with. And thank God that was 28, almost 29 years ago. And praise the Most High, we're still jamming on the living plane of creation.
Oh, beautiful, Brother John, beautiful. You know, it's awe-inspiring, because, like I hear, and I can see correlations, like as you say, the testimony of the divine, just coming through someone, so to attest to the true virtues within your wife. Because, see, those virtues are what we will build a relationship upon, because that's what love will grow upon, right? She didn't come and tell you of her beauty for you to consider, because I guess you could have seen that with your own eyes. She came to attest of the virtues. And that's the essence of a true relationship, that the woman that really compliments you by the virtues you hold, by the virtues. And if the virtues are in Yah and true love is born, then we know that the offsprings and the generations will come along that path. And the challenges of life are what they are. Like growing up, one of the things I would always remember to talk about matriarchs of life is that my mother, she's a very hardworking woman. And she always, I would say, was the head of the family. So it wasn't that, my stepfather was the head of the family. It really was my mother. And she really not just was a nurturer, but provider, protector. And not just for our family, but my great-grandmother was the same. So she was for the community. And in that essence, when I would stand in devotion hall every morning, one of the things that would really rouse my spirit is when I would look upon the honor roll of the most intelligent people in my community or my district, which is probably a roll of probably 40 people in a place of probably like, you know, 1,400 or 3,000 people. You know, my mother's name is there, you know, amongst the most brilliant people. So the matriarch always had this important role that in the family, in the home environment. And then when I looked within my socialization, my education, she was there. She was the head of the PTA. So strong women are very synonymous with my life. Women that are a little bit more outspoken than the average is always a part of my life. And one of the reasons why I'm saying that part of this discussion is unbalanced, because we should really have a feminine presence, because I realized one thing. As men, all of us, I can assume and assess by our behaviors and our natures that we're really good people. Certainly good enough to be good husbands, good boyfriends, right? And truly good friends. But one of the things I've recognized with us is that spiritual men have this issue with connecting wholesomely with their wives, with their spiritual women. And it's something that when we who are coming forward as example, when we grow in it, we get it well, then we show others. But it's something that's costing us a lot, because the men and the women aren't communicating properly. So from having very outspoken women, I learned one thing. I would speak for the family. I would speak on behalf of her if she's not there, but I would not speak for her, because that is very important. Right. Essentially, we still have a society dominated by the patriarch. Now, in a philosophical and a psychological construct where men consider themselves to be the head, the leader, and right, as humans we all consider ourselves right, first cause, we still need to balance our mental patterns to allow for the woman to express for herself. That's why I love learning over the months that we've been on this program together, Brother Dan, about your family and about the matriarchs in your family, because I think it's the same thing for my family, that the matriarchs have been quite represented. And so honor to women, blessings to women, lots of love to women along all the planes of our evolution, because I know all are not spiritual in the sense of aware of their spirituality, but we are blessed by your presence and by the experiences we share together. I'm fine.
Don?
We're fine.
Yeah, Dennis, we didn't get a chance. Yeah, I'm looking forward to Dennis chiming in.
What happens is you're all right, but let me just explain something. And that as humans, we're what we call sentient beings. That is, we have feelings. When someone loves you or you love someone else, do you or them feel it? Well, we have this special attribute of feelings. And we can feel what other people think about us or how they're acting, and likewise how we act towards them or feel towards them. So what happens is this relationship between humans is something that we call love to a certain extent. But what really is, it's the sharing of feelings. When you share the feelings, you have a common link, a common bond. And it's something that's inherent in all humans. If you want to recognize it, that's up to you. If you want to ignore it, that's your choice. However, we originally got this when we were all little babies, and we were all little babies at one time. And what happens is we could get this feeling from our parents when we were very, very small kids. You can put it in words because it's feelings. We're beholden to the language to construct our feelings according to the rules of the language. But internally, we have feelings. And those feelings are with us since we were born for the rest of our lives. So we are in a special situation of being able to recognize when somebody loves us, or they don't love us, or we love them. But the feeling is mutual, and we must respect that because that's part of our nature.
Beautiful. I'd like to just show one thing. I think, John, you might be interested in hearing this as well, that unfortunately, since the painful passing of my mother-in-law, who, again, such a wonderful woman. I mean, she never spoke. I mean, in the 28 years that I was blessed to know her before she passed on, you know, this past September or late September, she never gave it to me. She never handed my head on a plate. I don't recall her insulting me. And the pain that my wife is bearing in her year of, in Jewish law, there's a year of mourning, that I find myself actually becoming a little bit more in feminine mode. Not that I'm changing my sexual proclivity. I remain what I am, the husband and the partner of the family, but rather I'm more in listening mode than I was in, say, before the passing on of my dear mother-in-law. And also something which kind of humbles me and kind of brought some tears to my eyes as I'm listening to you gentlemen speak, as I reflect back within myself, is that in Jewish feminine culture, in terms of greeting the Shabbat, the Sabbath, the woman is given the responsibility of lighting candles as a remembrance for the day of the Sabbath day. And my wife has always lit candles in remembrance for certain righteous souls of the past, but many times on a daily basis we light a candle of remembrance for our mother-in-law that she actually appoints me to light the candle. So to me, that's kind of like me going into the feminine world, where my wife normally would light the candle, and I'm getting goose pimples. Even as I share this with gentlemen, I don't think I'm sharing deep secrets as much as I'm just saying that this is an acceptable feminine mode where man can humble himself to the needs of his wife who is in pain, and actually she bequeathed him a little bit of how she experiences her spirituality. So it's like a different level of connection. I just wanted to share that with you, gentlemen.
Brother Don, can I ask
yes.
you this question?
Yes.
I feel really feel led to ask you this. What is your take on, I guess, the concept as first love at first sight? Is as far as your spouse, the one that you're supposed to be with, is it more of a knowing, like a just knowing, you just know that this is the person you're supposed to be with? Do you is it something that comes in the process of time? Like, you know what, I really love you. I really think you would be a good wife. Is it more so of a, you know, you choosing, or if it's something that's just like a divine, like this person is ordained, consecrated, or is it more so, like I said, in the process of time, you know this person is supposed to be? In your case, I know that was just a prophetic utterance through the lady, probably to give you the confirmation, like, yes, this is the one for you. But what's your take on that?
Well, I would say this, because from my own personal experience, and I'm testifying to you, Brother Saul, and anyone else listening right now, for me it was in fact love at first sight. But I wouldn't say that I loved her as much as I sensed a brighter light in the room. I don't know how to, it was like, you know, the proverbial lightning bolt. But I cannot say the love that I felt a week or 2 weeks before the wedding, because love first doesn't mean just, you know, to hug and kiss, but actually to respect. From the moment I met who would be my future wife, and now my wife of Allah for 28 plus years, from the moment I encountered her, I felt, again, this sense of, wow, this is someone different, and this is someone who I feel. So I could say I had love at first sight, but my first words, thoughts in my head were not, I love her, but as much as there's a brightness in this room. It's like a soul feeling.
Okay.
Now, just because that happened to me, I can't say it's going to happen to you. It's, you know, I'll just tell you this, that the week before I met a very righteous man in Jerusalem who blessed me that very soon I would meet my wife, and lo and behold, I found who would be my future wife. So I think part of the process is praying to the Most High, interacting with righteous souls who can bless us and pray for our behalf. I was once told by here's another secret I'd like to share with you gentlemen and the whole world. Before I started looking for a wife, when I was still very much immersed in my rabbinical studies, as I was told by someone, once you make that decision to find your life mate, your soulmate, so to speak, the universal microscope starts to focus in a little bit more on you, increasing your acts of kindness. So I'll just throw that all into the mix. It's not a yes or no type of answer, but it's part of this kaleidoscopic laboratory type of experience you have to go through. I like the term that Jerome used before, laboratory. So it's, you know, one more thing I want to mention, talking about, you know, institutionalized, faith-based or religious things. You know, when you read something in Scripture and then you go out into the street, you have to assume that people don't know what you just learned. Or in another plane, when you read in my field, in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Illness, a person who's psychotic doesn't read the definition of who they are. So, you know, when we get into Scripture or spiritual teachings, we have to develop a plasticity, a flexibility to see, unless we are prophetic, which I'm sorry to disappoint, I'm not. I'm not one of those people, and hopefully one day, but that would be, that's a nice life goal. However, we have to have the flexibility to see that it's like this and not like that. You know, in the color spectrum, there are colors that we see and many colors that we don't, but it doesn't hurt our efforts to pray and advocate for those who we interact with, who we get the impression that they're righteous, good, down-to-earth people, because I haven't met a righteous person who's down-to-earth and practical, as well as very spiritual. So with all this mixed together, that's how I'm going to respond to you.
I love it. I must say, brother, yes, I must say, Brother Dan, you know, listening to Travis's question and your answer, I reflect, like, upon, you know, I've had issues, and I think that's no public a lot about, you know, the choice of the right woman in my life. I mean, I was very much convinced, you know, a few months ago that I was in the right relationship. And, you know, over time, I began to put together most of what I've understood and what I've been taught. Now, I hear you speak of maybe the love at first sight, not correlating necessarily what Travis might feel the love at first sight is. But I think the only way a love at first sight comes up, or the possibility of that true knowing, to understand that there's a connection here that could go the rest of your life, I think it comes from what we call the astral plane, the spiritual world. And I think if we are spiritual beings, it's where our souls are rooted. That is the cause of our, that is the first cause, and the destiny, the duration, and the end results of our life. So I felt that mainly in a lot of cases, I was making the choices based upon maybe the view and the structure of what was handed to me. Like they say, if you believe in God in this way, and you have these ideals of life, then this is the kind of man you are. Hence being this is the kind of man you are, you express yourself in this way, and you look for a mate, you look for a wife in this manner. And these are the types of women that appeal to the kind of man you are. So there is a structure to the morality, to the ethics, to the deportment through your spirituality. So I was very much into that because, I mean, we have to follow some formalization, formative thought process. I was following that, and it got me to places where I question it. So where I'm at now, based upon the correlation of the information, and y'all can react to this, I'm thinking a lot of it is based upon who you are, or who I am as a person. Whatever my views of myself are, may they be good, bad, indifferent, or whatever they are, I think they do not correlate my ideals, but exactly what the nature of my experience are. So I think we're attracting to us exactly what we are. And I think sometimes maybe the reason why it's harder to find what we might consider the ideal mate is because we, the person, is not the ideal of our mate either. So we are not at the place where we think that's the relationship for us. And I think I was there. And I think a lot of us as men, and I think also as women too, suffer from this, that we are not exactly who we want in our lives. But if we are not who we want in our lives, it will not correlate. And Brother Dennis can speak about this because I feel an emotional connection when I hear him speak about a relationship, and I think he has a lot of what I need to hear. So, Brother Dennis, could you give a word on this, please, if possible?
Yes. What happens is love at first sight just means that you made a quick decision to share your feelings with that other person. That means that you're willing to surrender for longevity, that you're going to commit to the feelings of that other person, and you believe that their feelings and your feelings can be one and the same. That's considered a level of enlightenment. However, longevity does play a role in this. That relationship and those feelings will only exist as long as you want to share your feelings. The moment you don't want to share your feelings, the relationship deteriorates.
Gentlemen, I'd like to thank all of you coming on. So I'd like to, it was a very quick hour, but I think it was a very dynamic hour. I'd like to thank Jerome Sage, Butler Live from the Diamond, the Caribbean, the St. Andrews Precinct of Jamaica, and Travis and William, of course, Dennis Williams. So before we sign off, I think we'll go this way. Dennis, if you could have state your final wisdom for today, and then Travis and William, and then Jerome Sage Butler.
Love your fellow man. And say a prayer to God.
Amen. Travis?
Absolutely. Men are to always pray, pray without ceasing, connect with the Most High, and everything you need will be added in due time. Seek first the kingdom, all these things will be added unto you.
I would say seek Christ and love yourself, learn to understand who you are, and love others, everyone in your surrounding.
Beautiful. Jerome Sage.
Majestic brother, I'm thanking everyone. I just say, truthfully, learn to trust Yahuwah. Trust the Most High. Trust yourself. Love the Most High. And then you'll find yourself loving others, finding a loving mate. You know, balance attraction. To all the ladies out there, be strong, be wise, be kind.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Dr. Blake. I'd just like to remind everyone that we are now here on Blog Talk Radio in SoCalS. We're covering the majority of landmass across the world. I'd like to thank everyone who's listening, with our newest listeners in Morocco and Uzbekistan and Russia and South Korea. One day we hope to get into China and North Korea, and we're waiting for the crown of Africa, Ethiopia, to start listening in. But with that being said, blessings, I want to remind everyone, and I remind myself before anyone else, Don Zosio Goodman, I've got to be good. We've all got to be good. It's a nature good to do good, and as the Creator so patiently awaits all of us to return again to the land of our soul, with the land of our soul, where our soul is being outsourced from, is from our divine image. We'll help us out in scrimmage. Hope one way of a Havachad, one love, Gorlachad, one destiny, Kolano, for all of us, but Darkinum, Darki Shalom, in a peaceful and pleasant way. Let's return again. Here is the one of the great singers of the Jewish of the Jewish people, who passed away about 23 years ago, excuse me. And he was someone whose family escaped before the hellish fires of the Holocaust took place in Europe. His name is Rabbi Shlomo Kaulbach, and this song is called Return Again to the Land of Your Soul. Let's everyone love each other and respect each other. We've all got the divine image. And we'll see that we're going to get to the place we have to be, which is universal redemption, speedily in our days.
Thank you.